Thanks for sending us your email. Having produced issues, etc. for more than 15 years, I can tell you that we've never received email response like this. Unfortunately, we simply can't reply to all of your email. So here's a way that I can almost guarantee a response to your question or comment. Call the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8384. It's available for your questions or comments 24/7, 618-223-8384.
I think this was an attack not only on one man, but on the values of tolerance and respect for people of all faiths and backgrounds.
That's Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. She's condemning the assassination of the only Christian member of Pakistan's federal cabinet, Shahbaz Bhatti. I didn't even know that there was a Christian member of Pakistan's cabinet. Of course, Bhatti was outspoken against some elements in the implementation of Sharia law in Pakistan. Also, alongside, we have another state here in the United States considering the possibility or the need to ban Sharia law in their borders. That's Tennessee. Joining us to talk about both of these issues for the next few minutes, Robert Spencer, director of Jihad Watch and author of several books on Islam, including his latest, The Complete Infidel's Guide to the Quran. Robert, welcome back.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
What do you think the sudden assassination of Shahbaz Bhatti means for the plight of Christians in Pakistan?
It means that Christians are going to continue to be victimized under the blasphemy law, which Muslims for years have used simply to gain advantage over Christians. If they wanted to seize their land, if they wanted to get money from them, something like that, they would accuse them of blasphemy, get them out of the way, and be able to get what they wanted. And this is something that is very serious human rights abuse. But it continues because, of course, in Islam, blasphemy is punishable by death. And so the idea of not having a blasphemy law is something that Islamic supremacists cannot accept. And so they are now targeting for assassination the politicians like Shahbaz Bhatti and like the governor of the Punjab, who was murdered a few weeks ago in Pakistan for also speaking out against the blasphemy law. They're actually killing the politicians who are against it in a very effective way to make sure that it's going to stay on the books.
And also to just tell the Christian population, in effect, this is Sharia, this is Islam, this is what it's going to be?
Yeah, exactly. This is what you, this is your life in Pakistan, and it's not going to change.
This is incredibly thorny for the United States politically, because we have troops in Afghanistan, the porous border, the issue of terrorism. Pakistan is not the greatest ally, if they are at all, at this point. How does that all shake out?
This is the big problem, that we have been treating Pakistan like an ally, while there are significant elements of the Pakistani government, including most notably the ISI, the Pakistani spy service, that has been have been actively aiding the jihadists. And in other words, we're then paying money to the Pakistanis to fight against the jihadis who are actively being supported, often with the same money, by elements of the Pakistani government. And meanwhile, the Christians are in a more precarious position than ever. And as we see from this assassination yesterday, this is not going to change anytime soon. If we really wanted to have a sensible foreign policy at this point, we would make any foreign aid to Pakistan contingent on their genuine crackdown against jihad groups and on their crackdown against anybody who victimizes religious minorities in Pakistan. That would be much more effective, but that ain't going to happen.
Another subject I wanted your thoughts on is the fact that Tennessee is contemplating some legislation that would not only ban Sharia law in that state, but would actually go as far as making the practice, some versions of Sharia law, a felony punishable by up to 15 years in prison. What are your thoughts there, Robert?
Well, I think that what they're trying to do in Tennessee is completely laudable and right, and that is to outlaw the political aspects of Islam, which are supremacist and contradict the freedom of speech, the freedom of conscience, and the equality of rights of all people before the law, which are core American principles. And so if we're going to have our politicians, when they are sworn into office, promise to preserve and protect the Constitution of the United States, then that has to have some substance, some reality, some teeth. And this is one one way to do it. There needs to be a recognition that there is this political aspect of Islam and that it does contradict American freedoms in these particulars and others. And so it's not in the least out of line for states to try to protect themselves from this. So law in Tennessee is being attacked by those who are against it, like the Hamas-linked group, the Council on American Islamic Relations, by saying that it is outlawing Islamic religious practice. That's not in the least the case. We have to draw the distinction between Islam as a religion and Islam as a political ideology, which has been hardly noticed at all in the United States. But that's what this is all about.
How do you respond to someone, Charles Haynes, a senior scholar with the Nashville-based First Amendment Center, says that the legislation defines Sharia in a way that very few Muslims in America would agree with, and he says, quote, it's an attempt to demonize an entire religion because how some radical Islamists interpret Sharia, it's wrongheaded and unconstitutional. What do you make of his comments?
Well, I think, you know, it's amazing how suddenly when Sharia is challenged that Muslims suddenly say that it doesn't really have any real content, and it's so multifarious that we can't really point to anything and say what it is. Look, there are two Sharia states in the world today. That is where Sharia is fully implemented, and that's Saudi Arabia and Iran. Both are severe human rights abusers because of elements of Sharia. We have seen Sharia states throughout history in the Islamic world, and they have all been organized according to that same kind of pattern, the same institutionalized oppression of women and non-Muslims, the same denial of freedom of conscience and freedom of speech. There's never been a Sharia state that was pluralistic and taught equality for all people. It's not part of Sharia. And so these guys are just not being honest when they say, well, Sharia is really anything you can make it, and the people who are against it are just ignorant and don't know anything about what Sharia is. Actually, we know far too much about what Sharia is, and that's why we're against it.
Is there an element inside the United States Muslim community that would or has stated in any way that Sharia ought to be the governing principle, if not law, in the United States? 1 minute, Robert.
As a matter of fact, the co-founder of the Council on American Islamic Relations, Omar Ahmed, said in 1998 that he'd like to see the Islamic government in the U.S. and the Quran the only law of the land. Also, Ibrahim Hooper said he'd like to see Islamic government, the CARE spokesman, in the United States. And so these guys are usually understood as being moderates, but actually it just means they don't want to blow things up. They want to bring Sharia here in peaceful ways.
Is what we need, with only about 30 seconds, perhaps a statement at a higher level than just the states saying, look, we have a constitution, no religious law, period, is going to govern the laws that we create here or implement here in the United States?
Well, I think that really is already there. You know, Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion. To implement Sharia provisions in the U.S. would be essentially to establish a religion. If prayer in schools establishes a religion, then implementing elements of Sharia certainly does, and it ought to be understood as such.
Robert Spencer is director of Jihad Watch and author of several books on Islam, including his latest, The Complete Infidel's Guide to the Quran. You can purchase this book under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Robert, thanks for being our guest.
Thank you.
Well, when we come back, Chris Roseboro is going to join us. Now, this is no laughing matter whatsoever. We have a small group, Westboro Baptist Church, that have made a big stink. They've found themselves in court. They defend their actions, which is usually making a protest, a very vocal and in many ways insulting protest, at funerals of fallen soldiers here in the U.S. Their message is, this is God's punishment. You're paying for your acceptance of homosexuality and your own sins. We'll see what else they believe and what they practice and whether it's Christian when we come back with Chris Roseboro.
Did you know that you can listen to Issues Etc. live on most smartphones? Just go to the Listen Live page of our website, issuesetc.org, click the smartphone link, and you can listen on your smartphone weekday afternoons between 3 to 5 Central. Old Theology, New Technology, Issues Etc., now broadcasting live to the world on most smartphones. Issues Etc., issuesetc.org.
Thanks for sending us your email. Having produced Issues Etc. for more than 15 years, I can tell you that we've never received email response like this. Unfortunately, we simply can't reply to all of your email. So here's a way that I can almost guarantee a response to your question or comment. Call the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8384. It's available for your questions or comments 24/7, 618-223-8384.
Often imitated, never equaled. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The Turning Point.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
What caused Abby Johnson, the director of a profitable Planned Parenthood clinic in the college town of Bryan, Texas, to leave her job and become a pro-life advocate? In her new book, Unplanned, she explains the turning point came when her assistance was needed during an abortion. Unlike dozens of others she had witnessed, this one required an ultrasound. There on the monitor, she saw the ugly reality of abortion as it was taking place. The ultrasound screen doesn't lie. It shows a baby. And as more women see these images, the more women there are who reject abortion.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.